This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It is officially draft week. But more importantly, it's officially mock draft week. This week on Pod Like a Raven. Yeah, so order of importance, you know, the NFL draft, or that me and the fellas are going to run through a mock draft here of the first round and try to predict at least one guy correctly. I'm Antonio Barbera. Thank you so much for listening to us here on Pod Like a Raven. There are some things to do. It is an exciting episode for us. It is the mock draft that we do every year of the first round. Bring in my co-host. We got a lot to cover, so I'm going to bring in my co-host right away, starting first on the East Coast, Tim Horsey. Tim, stall for 10 minutes so I can figure out what the heck to do with the first pick.
No, I'm not going to do that. How's everybody doing today? This is my favorite episode of the year, I think. Maybe the Ravens winning playoff games, but not that hasn't happened a ton in our Pod Like a Raven life here on the podcast. So there's something about, you know, my Mondays, to take you behind the curtain a little bit, my Mondays are usually my busiest day, as it is for most people when they go to work, I would assume. By the time we get to the Pod Like a Raven recording time, you know, obviously we record this on Monday evening, sometimes I'm like, I can't wait to see the fellas, but man, I just do not have the energy. I am full of energy for this one. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. I'm not certain about any of my picks yet. As Antonio said, I'm trying to stall for you here. I hope it's working. But I cannot wait to break these down, picks. We'll do the whole 32, then we'll criticize each other. We'll laugh at each other for making ridiculous things. It should be a fun time. I'm excited.
And on the West Coast, Jace, I need a nice wide five here. How are you doing over there? Not a tight five, but a long five, so that I can figure what the hell I'm doing with the first pick.
Well, I'm doing great, Antonio. Like Tim, draft week's always really exciting. We did very well last year in the mock draft, which I think we'll get more into in a moment. So that's exciting. I love the mock draft. I love the real draft. This is a really important draft for the Ravens. I think that's why I am so excited. Obviously, the strength of your team is built through the draft. The Ravens had a spectacular 2018 draft, if you need reminding. Lamar Jackson, Orlando Brown, who they turned into another first-round pick after several Pro Bowl seasons. Mark Andrews, Bradley Bozeman, Deshaun Elliott, Anthony Averett. So many starters from the 2018 draft. 2019 draft, 2020 draft, even 2021 draft. Little more mixed. And what was the result? An 8-9 record in 2021. Things move fast in the NFL. And so, now that we're 4 years removed from 2018, it's time for a home run draft again. But I believe the Ravens are picking 14. It's the highest they picked in years. I'm very excited. It's a very important draft for the franchise to get right on the right track. But that's exciting, too. There's excitement in the unknown and these pivotal moments. So, yeah, I'm fired up for the draft this week.
I was a little in between on the Ravens at 14 because it wasn't a top 10 pick, but it also wasn't their usual 25 through 32 pick. But after doing the research for this mock draft, I'm feeling good. There are 14 very, very good players in this draft, and I'm confident that the Ravens are going to find one as long as they don't trade back and try to do some more things later on in the rounds. All right, so we have one quick thing about the Ravens in terms of news, and then we are going to move on to the mock draft. And that is, I guess it's kind of like a no news is good news situation, and this is coming from Ian Rappaport. Ravens All-Pro offensive tackle Ronnie Stanley received a medical checkup recently, and he's on pace to be ready for 2022, sources say. That's it, and that's good, and that's good to hear, because that means that there were no problems, there's no delaying, no pushing things back, and I would love for him to be the starting left tackle in week one of the 2022 season. Any comments to that, guys, besides sounds good?
Yeah, sweet. Yeah, believe it when I see it. I hope it's true. And yeah, as you said, it would solve a lot of problems if Ronnie Stanley's the left tackle to start week one.
Yeah, we'll see who's picking 14 for the Ravens. Jace. So we'll see, Jace, if that little news blurb is going to completely change your pick at 14. But yeah, that's it for the Ravens news. So let's get into this mock draft now. We've done this every year. If you have not heard it before, the three of us pick a random order pre-draft. And this year the order is myself, then Jace, then Tim. And we just go in that order through the first round. We are taking what we think will happen. We are picking the player that we think that team is going to end up drafting, not necessarily who we think that team should be drafting, but who we think the team will actually end up picking. Last year, one of our best mock drafts, I'll say. We actually were correct with picks 1 through 5 of this first round, as well as Devontae Smith, Kwity Paye at 21, Najee Harris at 24. That was the easiest pick to the Steelers maybe of all time. Rashad Bateman to the Ravens at 27. We got that one. Greg Rousseau to the Bills at 30. So we're coming off of a pretty good mock last year. We all have our doubts about the mock this year, guys. First impressions of this draft and of this batch of players.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot harder go, I think. It starts, obviously, at the very top. There is no consensus number one overall pick. I'm hoping Antonio is still thinking hard about what he might do at one, because I don't know what to do at two if he takes a specific player. Like, the consensus of who might be the top guy seems to be ever-evolving. Obviously, the quarterback class, I think, is what helped contribute to us nailing a lot of the picks last year. We knew before the college football season even started that Trevor Lawrence was going to be the first overall pick of last year's draft. There's no quarterback like that in this draft. And when that's the case, it makes things harder. When a quarterback isn't a slam dunk to go number one, and no team wants to trade up and get one. It just leads a lot of unknowns. So I agree with what you guys said, that it's a deep draft. I'm excited for what the Ravens have at 14. Because there will be a lot of great players, but it's hard. Like, I think in several years we'll look back and probably view the first overall pick from this draft as being underwhelming compared to other first-round picks, which isn't really fair to that first-round pick. It's just kind of a weird year. But, yeah, there's so many unknowns. The other thing to note is there are 8 teams with multiple first-round picks, which seems like has to be close to a record. Certainly, I don't remember this many teams having this many picks. And that means there will be trades. Teams will not remain in their spots, and that will obviously make things hard for the accuracy of our picks. So I think those are 2 things to keep in mind. There's no consensus on who is going where at this point. And also, there will be trades. So, yes, this will be the hardest mock I think we probably ever have to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's unpredictable, but I think that's what makes it so fun. I mean, I've heard people say over and over again, and, you know, oh, well, the draft, I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, not that it needs pub on here, but he was like, this draft stinks. I hate this draft. And it's like, the unpredictability is what's going to make this so, so very fun. I'm going to sit there and watch all 3 days of this. Yeah, there's a lot of investment from a Ravens point of view, because as Jace talked about and we've mentioned before on this podcast, it is a sneaky, very important draft for Eric DaCosta to replenish the cupboard of talent before Lamar Jackson gets paid. And there's been some misses in the last 3 years, and there's been some hits, but not the, you know, the level that we expect from the Baltimore Ravens. They got a ton of picks this year. There's going to be a ton of movement from them, so yeah, maybe call it purple tinted glasses. We picked 14, which is higher than we usually pick. Yeah, is this how it feels, Cleveland? That was only 7 minutes in. And I don't know. I think the unpredictability makes these type of exercises fun. Now, once we get on the field, maybe it's not as many impact guys, but every time there's a consensus about these guys are the best, or this guy's going to stink, or this is a good draft, or this is a top-heavy draft, or a deep draft, it's almost always wrong. So maybe this is one of the best drafts in recent memory. Who knows? You know, only time will tell. But I'm very, very excited to get into it. Let's just get into it. Let's do it.
All right. Well, with that, I will be on the clock drafting at number 1 for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And my thing here is, do they go productivity, or do they go potential? They have several needs. This is a team that's been bad for a long time. But they've fixed some spots, but they still have glaring needs, or had glaring needs, I'll say, on the offensive line and on the defensive line. They gave the franchise tag to the left tackle Cam Robinson. They recently signed the guard Brandon Scherff to a big deal in free agency. So they've sort of addressed that offensive side. So I turn to the defensive line, where Aiden Hutchinson has been mocked as the number 1 pick seemingly everywhere for months. He's versatile. He's got the pass rush. Obviously, the productivity was there. 14 sacks. Sets the edge. He had multiple snaps at nose tackle for that Michigan defense. Great hands. Ripping guys left and right off of him. He's very, very good. He was a very, very good college player. Is he a great, great future NFL player? Is he a deserving of the number one overall pick? I don't really think so. As a personal opinion, he kind of looks like, and this is going to end up looking so bad 5 years from now, but he looks like a better Paul Kruger to me, if you want a Ravens reference. He's got some of the same kind of moves, the same kind of speed and burst. The guys that I see him beating in this college tape is very slow, small right tackles. Didn't beat a lot of left tackles that I saw. So I have some questions here about whether he should be the number one overall pick. And I promise I was thinking that in the last few weeks. I mentioned that to my co-hosts. And then some news today that Hutchinson, who was the pre-draft favorite to go number one, it's shifted. The money's shifting, the odds are shifting, and now Trayvon Walker, who's maybe the most well-rounded of the edge rushers in this draft, he's now the favorite for the number one overall pick, and I think he probably should be the number one overall pick. But this is the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they don't do the right thing. They do the safe thing, and they've been doing that mistake for many years. They do dumb things all the time, and I think they do something dumb again. And the number one pick, they are drafting Aiden Hutchinson. I'm not getting away from it. I think they're taking him because he's the safest number one overall pick they could make. They get to tell the media afterward, look at all these numbers. Look at how good he was. Look at all the sacks. Look at all the tackles for loss. Whereas Trayvon Walker is somebody that they will kind of have to defend taking him in that number one spot. Only had 6 sacks with Georgia. I think he's somebody that you have to project upside with. And even though he probably should go ahead of Hutchinson, Jacksonville, they don't have the stones. They can't do it. They take Hutchinson, and he does not live up to the number one overall pick. But that is in. The pick is in for Jacksonville, Aiden Hutchinson.
I want to jump in here, Jace, real quickly, because as if you've listened to these before, we do lean kind of heavy on Jace in terms of these top college prospects because he just is way more in it than we are for the most part. But I want to steal a line from Nate Tice, who writes for The Athletic, and, you know, really, really smart football guy. One of those smart football guys that you like listening to. Breaks the game down in an easy way for the layman like us to understand. And he made an interesting point. He said, this draft is full of doubles. Trayvon Walker is your home run pick. But, you know, a home run can lead to strikeouts. So do you want to actually go with that way? Which I think is interesting. Seems like Hutchinson is your very typical doubles guy. We'll see what happens. What I think the part of the report here that you talked about with Trayvon Walker being the number one pick now in terms of the odds and the betting because of Peter King's report that came out on Sunday night, I believe, was that Trent Baalke, who is just straight up bad at his job. You know, there's no getting around that. The GM for the Jaguars. He apparently really likes Trayvon Walker, but the owner likes Aiden Hutchinson. So are you going to go against the owner here? Because he likes Trayvon Walker because he kind of reminds him on field anyway of Aldon Smith. Not a lot of production there. I don't know. Who knows? This could all be – we could wake up on Tuesday morning when this releases and it's like the Jaguars have told everybody they're taking Trayvon Walker. I could see them just going with, we're in a terrible spot right now. We're getting off the roller coaster that is Urban Meyer. Let's hit a double into left center and be okay with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel very similar about Hutchinson. Like, it's weird because I think if you picked Hutchinson at like 5th, I'd be like, wow, fantastic pick. But the idea for some reason of him being the first overall pick gives me some pause. NFL.com is their kind of predict the pick recap of him. Of Hutchinson says he is more likely, quote, more likely to contend for occasional Pro Bowls than become an all-pro playmaker, which is not necessarily what you want at the first overall pick. There's a report out there even earlier than Peter King's that, yeah, the pick for the Jaguars is down to, sounds like Hutchinson. Baalke said it's down to 4 players, and the thought is it's Hutchinson, Walker, and then the 2 tackles, Neal and Aquanu. So I like Hutchinson, I guess, at 1. I'm not sold on it. I'm going to go with the second overall pick to the Detroit Lions. Now, Hutchinson would have been a slam dunk here to the Lions.
Football
and I think
guy.
There's,
football guy.
Yeah, there's zero chance the Lions aren't taking the Michigan kid when they desperately need defensive line help. The one thing the Lions don't need, offensive line. So our tackle's already falling because we are, I'm reading the tea leaves of everyone rocketing this guy up the board. I am taking Trayvon Walker at number two here to the Lions. He's a hard worker by all accounts. Seems like a Dan Campbell guy. They need literally, I mean, the Lions are a team that need everything, but they especially need defensive line help and any sort of pass rush. I like that talent-wise, Thibodeau would probably be who I personally would look at this spot if you need pass rush like the Lions do, but I don't see, you know, this talk about him not, you know, how committed is he to football. I do not see that coexisting with Dan Campbell. So I am going with Trayvon Walker here at the second pick. I do think it seems like we're trending towards these two pass rushers certainly being gone in the top four, it seems.
Yeah, I think Trayvon Walker is, there's a lot of potential there. Like, just a lot of potential with a guy like that. So I think it's a safe pick there. Antonio, do you have anything to add here before I go number three?
Yeah, I tried to watch, let's say, more film on a lot of these first-round prospects than I normally would in my life, because I'm trying to bring the good content to the people, the listeners of Pod Like a Raven. Trayvon Walker looks awesome. He only had six sacks, and that's this thing, like this well-rounded moniker, I think sometimes can end up harming a player to where they drop because they don't have that like super skill or that super stat. But he does everything really, really, really well. Played in a lot of different spots on the field, was strong against the run, ridiculous pressure as a pass rusher. I wrote it in my notes, slices between linemen or bull rushes through them. And that seemed to be every other play. One of those two things was happening. He even did some, like, had some stuff within coverage that was great to see. And I was afraid doing this early prep that the well-rounded aspect was going to knock him down, but I guess that is not a negative. People are seeing this as he's very well-rounded, but amazing at all these things in terms of being well-rounded, and the sacks, the double-digit sacks will come. So I really like the player. I think we were like half joking that he was going to be a Raven like months ago, but that's not happening anymore. He's gone seemingly one or two.
Well, it's funny. We weren't joking. He was being mocked in that area to the Ravens at the start of this process, or I should say start of the off season when people start paying attention to draft stuff after the, you know, the actual football ends. And so, you know, it's interesting how he is skyrocketed up the board. All right. I'm number three here with the Houston Texans, who I'm doing this on the Draft Network, and they kind of do, as you your pick comes up, team needs. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different positions that they say as team needs for the Houston Texans. There has been a lot of talk about a guy like Sauce Gardner, the cornerback out of Cincinnati, who I think it's famously didn't let up a touchdown last year. For that team, nobody even threw to his side of the ball or the side of the field. Excuse me. There's Kayvon Thibodeau, who perennial, he was going to be one or two all year. And then he's doing stuff where he likes to get into cryptocurrency and does he love the game? And that's why Dan Campbell passed. I think he's interesting there as well. And people have kind of shook off the notion that the Houston Texans, they're like, well, they don't need a tackle because they have Laremy Tunsil. Let me inform you, they can get out of Laremy Tunsil's contract after next season. This is a team that needs everything, that needs talent across the board. So I'm going to go with a guy who Dane Brugler from The Athletic describes creates more pancakes than IHOP, which I absolutely love. He is one of the meanest players in this draft on the field. He can play a bit of right tackle. Apparently his ceiling, if he kicks inside, is an elite level, possibly Pro Bowl, multiple Pro Bowl, All-Pro guard if they decide to keep Tunsil and move him there. It's the man out of NC State, Ike Ekwonu, I think is going to be the pick there. I think there's three tackles in this draft that will go probably before the Ravens pick, which is a need for them as well, as, you know, as we've noted a number of times here. I think Ekwonu and Evan Neal are close with Charles Cross behind them, the man out of Mississippi State. But for me, you read all this stuff, you watch the stuff, and Ekwonu, maybe Evan Neal is the more
fluid player as an offensive tackle, but Ekwonu's just meaner. He's an elite pass blocker and a dominant run blocker. He loves beating the brakes off of guys. And if you listen to Pod Like a Raven at all, you know, for a minimum 25 minutes, you've heard me talk about an offensive line trying to take somebody's head off. So for me, make it Ekwonu, the pick there for the Houston Texans at 3.
Tim, I love that so much. And I love that you took him ahead of Evan Neal, because I agree with that 100%. Got a little, my comp is Quentin Nelson. Got a little Nelson anger and roughness to him. He has maybe the most fun YouTube clip to watch, yes, because he's just constantly looking to throw guys aside, and he succeeds in that on multiple occasions. I don't know if you mentioned this or not. Ran a 40 in under 5 seconds. Ran a 4.9340. So that's the athlete that we have, who's also angry and wants to win every block and throw people aside. So I love that pick. I am surprised, however, with being on the clock as the New York Jets GM, I am surprised that a couple of guys are still available. I was expecting Kayvon Thibodeau to be gone at this point. And so I had the Jets sort of even more than penciled in, almost in pen. Sauce Gardner going there and that pick, but I got to stick to my notes. I got to stick to what I believe in. And I think Kayvon Thibodeau is the best, big asterisks everywhere, the best prospect in this draft. He's got the crazy speed, power, burst, quickness, tackling. His arms are like a couple of 8-foot sledgehammers. And I think he would have been the top pick in this draft. And so if he's still there at 4, Robert Saleh and the New York Jets are jumping all over this. We're going to address, you know, spoiler alert here is that I'm picking for the Jets again in not too long. So we're going to address the secondary later in this draft if something falls to that number 10 spot. But Kayvon Thibodeau, still there at 4. I'm taking him. He's going to be a disruptor. He's going to be getting double-digit sacks multiple years. And that's the pick at number 4.
I love it. The Jets have needed an edge rusher, like, seemingly forever. I think Thibodeau, I'm with you. I think he's the best. I was desperately hoping he'd fall to the New York Giants here at 5, because they, coincidentally, both New York teams, who I believe have, what, the matching worst record since 2017 in the NFL. It's been a rough time to be a New York football fan. But I think at this pick, the Giants, another team that needs quite a bit of everything. but particularly, I'm looking at the offensive line here, and they have Andrew Thomas and no one else at left tackle. And Andrew Thomas is a great left tackle. And I think this guy can be a great right tackle in the NFL. He played it in college. The pick is Evan Neal, offensive lineman out of Alabama. He played guard. He started at guard at Alabama. He started at right tackle at Alabama. He started at left tackle at Alabama. He is a freak. He is so tall. He is 6'7", 350, great athleticism for his size. I just think you put him at right tackle for the Giants, and you have a good thing for the next several years with him and Andrew Thomas. The rest of the offense, who knows? There's a lot of question marks there, but you at least have your foundational pieces on either side of the line. And then when the Giants, you know, only win 5 games again this year, they can draft a quarterback like C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young next year. So the pick is Evan Neal at number 5.
Yeah, it's... See, now this is one of the worst picks, and I admit when we did after the episode last week, we did a random number generator to figure out, so we could do a little bit of research on team specific stuff for each of these teams. And when I got 6, I had some expletives in my head, because I don't know what the hell the Carolina Panthers are. I don't know their plan. Matt Rhule's seat is hotter than hot, it seems like, but then I could also just see him sticking around for a while because Carolina just doesn't really know what they're doing. And this is the first spot. Now, again, we are not projecting trades, and there are going to be trades in this first round. That's how this is going to happen because of all the multiple first-round picks, what have you. This is one of the spots where
pre-no trades or whatever, there's quarterback links. There's Malik Willis. There's Kenny Pickett. I believe the owner, who is a very hands-on guy in Carolina, is a former Pittsburgh man. And I think he donates to the school, so there's links to Kenny Pickett there as well. Ahmad Gardner, Sauce Gardner, has fallen this far, but you think of the Carolina Panthers, and I'm looking at their depth chart now. They have J.C. Horn on the hook for a couple of years now. They picked him in the first round last year, but he was hurt all year. And then after that, I mean, the guys that they have past 2022 – Troy Pride Jr., Stanley Thomas Oliver, Keith Taylor are the other guys, along with Rashawn Melvin and C.J. Henderson, who was a former first-round pick who ended up being a bust. So do you go best player available and take Sauce Gardner there, a guy who's supposed to go number three? You don't, because you're the Carolina Panthers. Like, just like Antonio said before, I probably would take just Sauce Gardner and lock him up with J.C. Horn, and they're your two corners for the next 5 years. Sounds pretty good to me. So do I go quarterback here? Do I finally break the duct and pick a quarterback? No, I do not do that either. There's multiple reports that all the smoke around Kenny Pickett to Carolina at six is not real. So, boys, there's going to be a run on tackles. I'm taking the third tackle in the top six. I'm taking Charles Cross out of Mississippi State. He didn't get a ton of time to do run blocking because he's in that air raid offense under Mike Leach, but proved to be a very, very solid pass blocker, somebody that can keep Sam Darnold or whoever the hell is throwing the ball in Carolina, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo, whether it's Baker Mayfield, even though that would really upset Robbie Anderson if you didn't see those social media posts. I think Charles Cross is the pick here. You take a bit of a safer pick as well, but again, another double into left center here and a guy that you know can pass block at the next level. So there, Cross is the pick for me.
I like Cross for two reasons. Like you said, the pass blocking is where he shines, and I think that's important for the NFL because I think you could probably get better at run blocking more so than pass blocking at the next level. I think it's probably a little easier. But the Ringer just had this nugget, Tim, that I think makes Cross such a good pick. In one of their draft guides, they had the Panthers have had seven different starting left tackles in the past seven seasons. Not good.
I feel way better about that selection.
Yeah,
they
need to, as you said, despite the, they need to address that position. And as you also mentioned, despite the, at one point having, quote, mutual disinterest, it does seem like either Baker Mayfield will be the Panthers quarterback or Jimmy G. So I like that pick a lot.
Yeah, I like that pick as well. We have these three tackles already gone now, the top three tackles, right? I had Ekwonu as like the most fun guy and maybe has the best chance to be a multiple time Pro Bowler. I had Evan Neal as he will play in the NFL for 10 years. And then Charles Cross is sort of this third guy who looks, the thing that I saw from him more than anything else was the feet. Super quick feet, super nimble for a big guy. There's a lot of film of blitzes where they're doing like stunts. They're doing the rushers are doing crosses in front of him, and he's easily able to pick those up, going left and right. Saw a little bit of the chokehold move when he's getting beat to the outside. I saw that a couple of times, so he'll have to clean that up because the refs very much enjoy calling holding on that type move in the NFL. So we'll see if he can clean that up. But a solid pick, and Tim, you did me a little bit of a favor there because picking with the Giants now, they're going best player available. They've already dealt with getting a strong tackle in Evan Neal, and now they're able to turn around two picks later, if this is still a thing that exists by draft time. And they're taking Sauce Gardner, and it kind of works out for them pretty well because it's a bit of a position of need. They don't have, let's call it youth. I mean, NFL youth. James Bradbury is 28 years old, so that's not NFL youth, I guess. And he's going to plug in and try to start from day one. Sauce Gardner, the best corner in this draft. He's, I think, 6'3". He runs the routes for the receivers. He loves him some press man coverage and was arguably the best corner in college football this year. And he goes to the Giants. Let me get the number right, at pick number 7, and they are thrilled to have him. And I think they would take these two guys in the top 7 picks, I think, without hesitation.
Yeah, I think if you are Joe Shen, I believe, is the GM for the Giants from the Bills organization. If it was an Antonio Barbera instead, they're putting up a statue outside of the stadium for you with this. Evan Neal and Sauce Gardner at 5-7, the way this has played out is fantastic for what they're doing. And James Bradberry is one of the few good players on that Giants team. Sorry, Giants fans. But he's probably not going to be on that roster much longer. So there's your natural replacement as well.
And now the Atlanta Falcons are on the clock, and you talk about a team that needs truly everything. They're going to be one of the three worst teams in the NFL, I think, this year. I've done this every mock. I've had the same guy to them, and he's here. I think it begins. It is time to select a quarterback, and that quarterback is Malik Willis out
what?
Of Liberty. We are rebuilding in a post-Matt Ryan world, Tim. Because if you're the Falcons, if you're Arthur Blank, why do you care? Why should fans care? Why would anyone care about this organization if you don't have a quarterback? You are employing Marcus Mariota, and I don't know. You have no good receivers. Wow. I mean, they need everything. But you need a building block, and I think Willis is, you know, he's so intriguing, and I think brings basically everything Matt Ryan has lacked the last few years, i.e., elite athleticism. I think it's just going the complete other way. It's someone Arthur Smith I think can really build around. And I think, I don't know that teams should do this, but I think Arthur Blank is the type of guy to be like, we need to inject stuff into the franchise. He did it when Michael Vick went to jail and they went 4-12 and they drafted Matt Ryan third overall. And I think they're going to do it again in a post-Matt Ryan world. I think they are looking at a quarterback and someone's got to take a QB. And I think Malik Willis, even though he might not be the most polished, I think he's the most intriguing, and I think I don't think we're getting out of the top 10 without one of these quarterbacks going off the board. And
just no love for Felipe Franks, Jace, I guess.
Yeah, I couldn't. I was like, Josh Rosen was there for a bit, but I don't think he still is. I couldn't remember which college quarterback of the past they had, but yeah, Felipe Franks, not the answer. Malik Willis, it's a new era in Atlanta, and I think. Again, it's hard to know what they'll do because they need absolutely everything, but I think this is at least a starting point for the franchise.
So one, my shocked expression, I'm annoyed because I was going to try and shock the world and take Willis at 9. Now I know to the Seahawks. Now I know where that's going. I want to set up a point that, and I use The Athletic because, guys, The Athletic is really good. They do really, really good stuff. So does USA Today, Jace. No, don't worry. I read them too. But Robert Mays from The Athletic made an incredible point a couple weeks ago where he mentioned they were talking about a quarterback at 8. You know, they've signed Marcus Mariota as well to kind of be the stopgap starter in Atlanta. His point was, as a Bears fan, he's relating it to Justin Fields. Once you get your guy, that's the start of your window. So it's tough to put Malik Willis in a situation where, one, he might not play, and then, two, if he does play, he's got no offensive line around him. He's got barely any weapons. So you're starting him off, instead of starting him off on second base, he's behind home plate in the dugout because of how far back the Falcons are. So it's a bit of a risk, I think, taking him at 8 there when maybe the full rebuild doesn't come until he's in his third year in the league, and then you have to start thinking about paying him. That would be my only thing there. But you're right. I mean, they absolutely need a quarterback, and Atlanta, Atlanta's not a great sports town anyway, so maybe get a quarterback there who is a flashy guy that might put some butts back in the seats there. I'm up at 9, but if we want to recap real quickly here what happened before we do that, let's go. I'm going to go Aiden Hutchinson at 1. We have Trayvon Walker out of Georgia going to the Lions at 2. Ikem Ekwonu, the offensive tackle from NC State, to the Texans at 3. Kayvon Thibodeau to the Jets at 4. Evan Neal to the Giants at 5. Charles Cross, the offensive tackle from Mississippi State, to the Panthers at 6. Sauce Gardner from the Giants, from Cincinnati, going to the Giants. They get Evan Neal and Sauce Gardner there. And then the first bomb, I think, of this draft from Jace, Malik Willis, the quarterback out of Liberty, going to the Atlanta Falcons. Now, as I mentioned previously, I was planning on taking Malik Willis there. I think the Seahawks, much like the Falcons, are a team that needs everything, even though Pete Carroll insists they're not in a rebuild. You are. Drew Locke is your starting quarterback. They haven't had an offensive tackle in God knows how long. Russell Wilson constantly running for his life, but there's all three of the big guys are off the board. I could see, apparently, according to Danny Kelly from The Ringer, who's a big Seahawks fan, they love old guys who show up at the Senior Bowl, which was Trevor Penning. Probably a bit too rich for our blood here at 9. And don't worry, there's been a lot of links to Trevor Penning to the Ravens over Ravens Twitter over the past 48 hours. That should be fun. But so for a team that needs everything, I think the guy who is the second most likely to be your home run or strikeout type of player here, or maybe home run single, like Trayvon Walker was at 2. It's the corner at LSU, Derek Stingley Jr. And off the charts season his freshman year for that dominant LSU team that with, you know, the likes of Joe Burrow and Justin Jefferson on the offensive side of the football. Had some injuries as well. Hasn't really performed as well. Jace, you could offer more insight into how he performed his final 2 years in college. But the talent is there. His pro day was awesome. You know, the measurables are all there. And I think that he has a chance to be – there is a chance he's the best player far and away in this draft class. So you get him at 9, I'm taking that. And you kind of start trying to find talent all over the field for the Seahawks.
I love that for the Seahawks. Yeah, coming out of his like freshman year, everyone was like, Derek Stingley, future top 5 pick. And then, yeah, injuries have just kind of derailed his past 2 years. But I still think the talent's there. And I think he's, you know, Pete Carroll, former defensive backs coach. He loves his defensive backs. I think this is a great pick for the Seahawks. And I could definitely see them taking him if he's on the board. But I am with you, too. I think it would be very funny if one of the tackles we have off the board, if perhaps Charles Cross falls, if the Seahawks take an offensive lineman in the top 10 after not drafting like a single offensive lineman for Russell Wilson, basically for 10 years, I think that'd be very funny.
Yeah.
And a great bit. Right. So I'm kind of rooting for that too.
Yeah. Derek Stingley, the tape so good that first year and so little of it for the next 2 years. So we'll see what, we'll see which player shows up in the NFL. I am picking for the Jets at 10, and you kind of, for the second time, I think, in a row, Tim, you've kind of helped out the GM after you with this pick, because the Jets here need help defensively. They gave up the most yards and the most points in 2021. They addressed that with their first pick, grabbing Kayvon Thibodeau, and they were looking to maybe get a Sauce Gardner, looking to maybe get Derek Stingley, but neither of them are available. So instead, what do the Jets do? They turn to Flash. They have been dying to get a top NFL wide receiver. They were trying to get, potentially, Davante Adams, some other big names. They were trying to get the name, I can't remember now, the Chiefs.
Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Hill. They were trying to get a trade for Tyreek Hill. Neither of those worked, so they reach at this pick for the best wide receiver in this draft, and that's Jameson Williams. And they are not afraid, even though they probably should be, about the torn ACL that happened in January, but they believe he can make a comeback. He is far and away the best wide receiver, if healthy, in this class. Had all the numbers at Alabama, has all the skills, has the size, 6'2", 180, had 1,500 receiving yards and 15 touchdowns for Alabama. And they get a stud to match with Zach Wilson for the next 10 years. So the Jets, they address one thing on defense, but due to picks, their, you know, the cornerbacks being taken a little bit ahead of them, they turn to offense for now and then maybe try to address defense a bit later on in the draft, because I think they have another pick in the early 30s, I want to say. They're picking again at like 35, so they'll deal with the defense then when I don't have to mock it. So Jameson Williams to the Jets at pick 10.
At number 11, the Washington Commanders are on the clock for the first time under their new name, and the slide stops. I'm keeping it pretty simple. Kyle Hamilton is being selected by the Commanders with this pick. They have needed a safety for a long time. Landon Collins recently released, did not quite pan out, I think, the way they hoped. And I think Washington just has never, in a very, very long time, had a guy on the back end that can really force turnovers at a high rate. And I think they're over the moon if Kyle Hamilton falls to 11. They definitely could use a second receiver to help out Carson Wentz, lest we forget he is their quarterback now. And certainly, you know, offensive line is always seemingly an area of need for Washington. But I think they go Kyle Hamilton and just try to, you know, with that stud defensive line they have, in theory, wasn't as good as you kind of probably wanted it to be last year. But put another playmaker on the back end, and I think they could have a pretty special defense. So Kyle Hamilton is the pick at number 11.
What do you project him as, Jace? Because he's the most – and somebody who doesn't watch a ton of college football, everybody goes super smart, very instinctual, knows all of that, but, you know, not – maybe he's your tweener and people got scared off by the Isaiah Simmons thing. I think Kyle Hamilton's a better football player than Isaiah Simmons was out of Clemson, who ended up going to Arizona. But what does he project as? I mean, I think if he falls to 14 and the Ravens pick him, I'm ecstatic because I know he's a safety, but they'll just use him all over the field, and it will be awesome to watch. But what do you think for the Commanders?
I think that's definitely a concern because he is kind of, you know, definitely a lankier and probably not as, you know, doesn't have the high-end speed you might expect. But he's just so instinctual, I think, that he forced so many turnovers in college. It's hard to not think that, like, those skills translate, and so I'm higher on him. Now, I thought Isaiah Simmons would be good too. That's a little, I'll hand up. I thought he was so good in college, so that's definitely a concern. But I think Hamilton's a lot more natural fit at his position, and just is, like, real intriguing, I think, with his size and ability and stuff. So yeah, I think he could be pretty special. And I'm with you. If he falls to 14, even though the Ravens just signed Marcus Williams, I would not hate drafting Kyle Hamilton and just having two pretty good safeties, young safeties, for the next 5 years. That would be I'm very interested in that.
So, all right, I'm up at 12, and for those of you who are just skipping ahead to 14th pick, we apologize. but another team that I didn't really know what to do with is the Minnesota Vikings. As I mentioned before, I got third pick and I kind of hated it because I don't really know what these teams need. And it's interesting that I look here and not a ton of receivers have been taken. You know, obviously they have Justin Jefferson, who they're going to have to pay. Adam Thielen's getting older, and there's not a ton outside of that. With these receivers dropping like this, is this a time to take a player like that? And I'm doing like Antonio did and just trying to throw to other people because I'm very confused. I don't know what to do now. Garrett Wilson and Drake London are both still sitting there. But I am going to take the player that the Vikings have been mocked to in almost every single mock draft I've seen. And it's the third corner off the board, my second straight cornerback, and it is Trent McDuffie out of Washington. Some people have him as the second best. I know Dane Brugler from The Athletic has him as the second best corner in this draft in front of Derek Stingley. People are a little bit worried about his length and also a little bit worried that he wasn't thrown to on his side of the ball. He wasn't tested a lot because he was so good in coverage. But guess what? Neither was Sauce Gardner. You're really good, so they're not going to throw to you. And I think that's a positive rather than a negative. Smart football player, can play in a number of schemes. And again, you know me, isn't afraid to tackle. Likes playing up against the run, is an effective blitzer for a team that really has nobody on the back end, in the corner slot anyway. Obviously, Harrison Smith is there. And I was thinking of maybe pairing the two Golden Domers on the back end if Kyle Hamilton slipped again. But obviously, Jace, you know, cucked me again. So thank you for that, Mr. Evans. I got Trent McDuffie here, the corner out of Washington, going to the Vikings.
I like it. I feel like the Vikings have kind of taken a swing and miss at corner several times over the last handful of years, and it's definitely hurt them. So I think that's just a real solid pick to him.
And if real quickly, the two players that I think most of us would be the most excited about for the Ravens, Jermaine Johnson and Jordan Davis, call this purple tinted glasses, with two picks left, are both sitting there. So we're feeling pretty good as Ravens fans, I think.
Yeah, so this is pick 13. This is the everybody starts to sweat because we each have our own favorite for who we think the Ravens should take. So are the Texans, who are on the clock at 13, going to take whoever we think we want? They already drafted at pick number 3, and they took, according to our mock, Kwanu. So they've dealt with the offensive line. They need help all over the place. So after dealing with the offensive line, they turn to the defensive line. And there are a couple of guys on that line. I think a lot of us will be sweating because we want Jordan Davis to be available at 14. And I think he is available at 14 because Devontae Wyatt is going to go 13.
Wow.
He's the interior defensive lineman out of Georgia. He's very, very good. Good Lord, the size, the power, the speed. Here's another guy that I am positive will play 10 years in the NFL, clogging the middle of the line, and he goes so high as like a run-stuffing interior lineman because he can also rush the passer. Had multiple sacks with Georgia last year, is going to take on the double teams, is going to run stunts to break cut through the line. I would have liked him with the Ravens at 14. But I think the Texans view him as a guy who's going to play more downs than Jordan Davis will. And so they take him at 13, leaving the Ravens with a couple of fascinating players at 14.
Yes. And so here we are.
Hold on, Jace. Hold on. Before we get there, and not to tease people, why is Wyatt going ahead of Jordan Davis?
I think he plays more. I think he's really, really good at his role, and even for the role that he plays with the pass rush upside, he could be a three down guy, which at the moment we don't know if Jordan Davis can do. That's been sort of the big issue with him, is that is he a first and second down guy? Is he a 30% of the snaps guy at this point in time? And I think the film for Wyatt is enough to take him one step ahead when you think he's going to do more for you when you need guys that can play a lot because you have serious holes all over this team.
Yeah, I think with Wyatt, I feel like so much easier to project. Like, because I'm with you, and that brings us to the Jordan Davis conversation because I love him. I think Jordan Davis was the best player on the best team in America last season in college football. But also, yeah, what will he be in the NFL? Will that translate? I like the thought of it translating, but it's hard to know for sure. And it's that fact, I think, that will scare teams away from him. Because if it's just based on, like, things, freak athleticism we've never seen before and what he did in college, serving as, like, the disruptor in the middle, like, the guy in the middle that, aside from N'Kobe Dean, who we should say is probably also in the conversation maybe for this pick, you know, Davis was, I think, Georgia's most, like, important player, you could argue. Will that translate? Can he keep his weight and not, you know, he's a huge guy. You don't want him to get too much bigger than what he is, because that might sap some of the athleticism. And even though he has flashed some of the athleticism, can it translate into a pass rush? I don't know. That being said, I am intrigued by Jordan Davis, as we've said many times on this show. I think if he's there, for the purposes of this exercise, let's take Jordan Davis.
Yes!
14. but I do have questions about him, and I feel like the longer the draft process drags on, like, the less sure I feel like I get of Jordan Davis, because I feel like the draft process exposes your flaws, but yeah, I'm definitely intrigued by it.
Well, hold on then, Jace, I want to pick your brain. Let's pretend, because this is the Ravens pick, we can spend a little bit more time on it. Let's pretend the Texans go Jordan Davis at 13 and remove that necessity of for this exercise, quote unquote, for this exercise. What would you be looking for the Ravens in terms of best, you know, fit and availability at 14?
So if it plays out like we did in this, but Davis is off the board and Wyatt's there, I actually don't think they will take Wyatt. I think they're probably, if Jermaine Johnson's there, it seems like he'd be a guy they would go to. You know, they did just draft Adafe Owe last year, but I think you need more pass rush, you know, beyond just what they produced. Tyus Bowser tore his Achilles, and who knows if he's going to even be ready to play this year. They need pass rush, and I think having two bookend pass rushers for presumably the next 5 to 10 years would be very intriguing to them. But then the more I feel like, go on personally, I circle back to linebackers a lot. I love the idea of Devin Lloyd at this spot. The production was just off the charts, and also, N'Kobe Dean. I know what we talked about with James last week, but I still, for me, he was everywhere and was the man in the middle, a literal, like, mechanical engineer or something, an engineering major. What a brilliant guy on and off the field. It can just diagnose things. A rocket, undersized, sure, but I feel like he just is so instinctual that he just feels like a Ravens player to me in many ways. The other, I guess, position you would probably be examining at the spot is a cornerback. Andrew Booth is on the board. We kind of took a run on more corners. So for me, if Davis isn't there, I think in this scenario, I think they're probably picking between Jermaine Johnson and then one of the two linebackers. I personally have kind of circled back less on the need for an offensive lineman. I don't know where you guys stand on that at the first pick, just with those top three guys coming off the board. There's no one I think I love enough to warrant at 14, but that would, I guess, certainly, if Charles Cross is on the board, I'm not going to be stunned if the Ravens draft Charles Cross at 14. So, for me, if it's not Davis, I think it'll be one of the two linebackers or maybe a corner or Jermaine Johnson. Basically, whatever pass rusher is still there, whatever linebacker is still there, if they don't pick Davis.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't know how this has played out, how we've done this, because I think Antonio started this conversation with, I think there's 14 really good players. So I think the Ravens are going to have a good player fall to them at 14. I'm kind of stunned that both Jermaine Johnson and Jordan Davis were there. But looking at our top picks, the only guys who I'm, and we'll do a little bit of this later in the show, but the only guys that I'm like, whoa, wow, okay, I didn't think he would go that high, but obviously, what the hell do I know, are Willis and Devontae Wyatt. I think it's obviously good for the Ravens to have options at 14, but I'm with you on the offensive line. I don't think that at this stage anyway, you're going to take any of the guys that are available. I mean, unless they love one of the guards, Zion Johnson out of Boston College, who it seems like he's like a guard, and so it's not a premium position, but he's going to go like 20 and, be a Pro Bowler for the next 12 years or whatever it is, something like that. So I think that's interesting as well. But yeah, I mean, look, I love Jordan Davis. I'll die on the hill of Jordan Davis and Calais Campbell playing in a defensive line front, please. Like, that would just be so intimidating.
It just seems like a guy the Ravens would figure out.
Right.
Like, maybe that's putting too much faith in
Terrence Cody.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the concern, is Cody was awesome in college too, but I think he never had the level of explosiveness that we've seen from Davis. And that's, I think, what's intriguing, is right, that athleticism at a guy that size that we just haven't seen. And I think that's what makes it so hard to project. Like, I'm not going to be stunned if someone takes Jordan Davis at the top 10. Like if Pete Carroll's just like, he's a huge guy who could move real fast. I like that. Like, this is the man, a 70-year-old man who once took a shirt off for a meeting with DK Metcalf. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if Jordan Davis is off the board, I guess. But it's just, like, not knowing where to put him, I think that's hard. But we've talked about it a lot on the show. They need him. Brandon Williams is not going to be on this team. Michael Pierce, like him. He's a stopgap. They need a guy in the middle, and they haven't drafted a defensive lineman in the first round since they picked Haloti Ngata. That obviously worked out very well for the Ravens in roughly the same spot. I don't remember the exact
pick. I think it was like 12.
Ngata was, but I'm not going to say Jordan Davis is going to be Haloti Ngata, because I think Haloti Ngata was awesome and underrated and one of the best, defensive linemen in the NFL for a 5-year stretch there. But I'd be over the moon if they take Jordan Davis on draft night.
Yeah, I just wonder. I'm a Jordan Davis stan. This is a Jordan Davis podcast. But Jermaine Johnson and getting pass rush and getting him and Oway together, it's tempting too. But all right.
Well, and that's the thing with pass rushers. You have two they have to account for. It's harder to double two different guys.
Right.
So that's what's intriguing about that too.
It is a deep edge class, though, so maybe that plays a role in it as well. It's wide receiver and edge, apparently, are the two deepest things in this draft. And speaking of wide receiver, the fact that Garrett Wilson is still on the board at 15, will the Eagles draft a wide receiver for the third year in a row in the first round? Yes, they will, because Jalen Reagor didn't work out and Devontae Smith did. So they need a second guy. And Garrett Wilson, consensus top 10 pick. Daniel Jeremiah currently has him as the fourth best player on his big board. And somehow, us miscreants have let him stay this long. I think Drake London's an intriguing option too, but I'm running the card up to the podium with Garrett Wilson here. Explosive player,
comped by different people. I believe Daniel Jeremiah, as I mentioned, comped it to Stephon Diggs. Dane Brugler of The Athletic comped him to CeeDee Lamb. Excellent body control, incredible after the catch, gets to top speed quickly, makes every grab, has a few drops, but it's something that, it, you know, concentration stuff that it should be okay. You know, Jace, I want to throw to you a little bit. It seems like Garrett Wilson is him or Jameson Williams, if you want the guy that's going to take the top off, or kind of the two consensus guys. What do you make of Garrett Wilson compared to a Drake London or even his teammate Chris Olave at Ohio State?
Yeah, I think the thing people like about Wilson is he's probably the most well-rounded of the wide receivers. He kind of does everything well. He's got the speed, but he also can make pretty much every catch. And so I think that's why people intrigue him. I will say I did expect, when I did all my personal mocks, it's funny, I had a run on receivers, and so he'd been gone for quite a while by this point. So yeah, I think the Eagles would be absolutely thrilled. I feel like they seem a lock to be taking a receiver, certainly in this draft. And so, yeah, I'm with Antonio. I like what Jameson Williams can be more, and I think that's why a team like the Jets should take a gamble on him. But I feel like Garrett Wilson has like an extremely high floor and should be productive pretty much no matter where he goes.
All right, I'm on the clock at 16, but first I'm going to recap the last few picks. I think the last one we mentioned was 8, Tim. We had Malik Willis picked at 8 to the Falcons. Derek Stingley Jr. going 9th to Seattle. Jameson Williams going 10 to the Jets. Kyle Hamilton, I've seen him to the Commies on 85 mocks, seemingly. He just fits right into what they want, and that value seems right. Trent McDuffie at 12 to the Vikings. Devontae Wyatt at 13 to the Texans. Future Hall of Famer Jordan Davis at 14 to the Baltimore Ravens. And then Garrett Wilson at 15 to the Eagles. And I am now on the clock at 16 with the New Orleans Saints, who have two picks. They have a pick at 16. They have a pick at 19. This was done a few weeks ago in a trade with the Eagles to get a second first-round pick. Smells like they're going to package these two to move and get somebody else earlier in this draft. It would be a bit, it's a little confusing. Nobody seems to know. Nobody can read the tea leaves and understand exactly what they're doing at this point. But we're not doing trades, so I'm taking them as two picks. And the Saints, at the moment, they're rolling with Jameis Winston, seemingly, at quarterback. They have a need at left tackle. They have a need at wide receiver. There are players at both of these positions available at the moment, but I think there's more depth for them at 19 with wide receiver, which is where I will also be drafting. So at the moment, there's one guy left that fits a need for them at left tackle, and that is going to be Trevor Penning. He is maybe a half step behind these first three offensive linemen, and then it's this dude, this 6'7", 300-plus pound, just angry guy who's got a ridiculous motor, the body to play in the NFL. There are some questions about the competition that that he has played against, playing for Northern Iowa, not playing the biggest of opposition and not playing the biggest of defensive players, physically speaking, when you're playing on Northern Iowa. But I think he's got the right sort of meanness to him. There's all these clips of him at the combine, like trying to pick fights with all the defensive players, and I think the Saints see that and see a positive. I have a little bit of question marks from reviewing his film. It seems like he's off balance more than you would like. I see him leaning forward, doing the like forearm lunge at guys a lot with his arms. So we'll see if he can work out the footwork. But the body is there, and there's a need for a tackle for New Orleans. So they take Trevor Penning at pick 16.
Antonio, you, we'll get more into this later, but you've hurt my feelings because both of the last two guys you've selected were guys I had tabbed for this spot with the Los Angeles Chargers at number 17. A team that addressed a lot of their needs in different ways this offseason, they trade for Khalil Mack. Unless you forgot, they gave a monster contract to J.C. Jackson, who has led the NFL in interceptions since he came in. They do probably need a right tackle, which I was going to slot one Trevor Penning right into. I think another kind of they still need a little bit of secondary help. So I think I'm going to go in the spot for them with Andrew Booth. I think if one of these corners is on the board, they won't necessarily be upset. And I think for him, he doesn't have a ton of starting experience in his career because, you know, Clemson, they kind of rotate five stars through, so very similar to Alabama. But he's not going to be under a ton of pressure with the Chargers with them just having imported Jackson. So I think it's a decent spot. The Chargers don't – it's weird with the Chargers because they're a roster you look at and you say they don't need a ton, but they somehow keep not making the playoffs even though they have what seems like a top 10 QB and a good offensive line and all this stuff. So – it might for the Chargers. I think they're probably just in best player available mode because they have a pretty strong thing going. But I think Andrew Booth could help in terms of things they have quote unquote needs for.
Does the injury history scare you at all? Because I think that's the thing that you're hearing with Andrew Booth is that people are worried that they don't want to take him in the first round, much like Farley, the Virginia Tech corner last year with the Titans, because elite player, but. Might not be able to stay on the field.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a concern, right, I guess. But I think that's where, if you are a team like the Chargers, you kind of have a little bit of a more of a luxury to kind of to take chances. Because, kind of as Antonio was saying, when it comes to the Texans, you literally need players who will play. Even if, their ceiling isn't maybe as high, it's like we're so limited in just having NFL-level talent that, even if a guy, we know maybe this guy has all pro potential, but there's the giant question marks, really bad teams. It's harder to kind of, I think, ignore those red flags when you just desperately need guys and your team's trying to win because, the bad teams, all the coaches and the staff are another bad season away from probably getting fired. So, I think that's where a team like the Chargers can definitely take a little more of a gamble with that kind of thing.
All right. Much like the Giants earlier in this process, and I believe even the Jets too, I think the Eagles are ecstatic with their two picks and how these have ended up. I think that there is a case. Jordan Davis has been linked there a lot. If he falls past 14, he's easily going to be the scoop up at 15, and then they'll wait for one of the wide receivers at 18. Drake London is still here. For the Eagles, they obviously won't go back-to-back because Garrett Wilson was inexplicably there. They're going to take him there and see what happens at 18 to make sure nobody else picks him because obviously we've seen the Saints. They definitely need a wide receiver as well, if I could take a guess where Antonio is going next. But don't worry, I'm not going there. I'm just going to go a guy who, probably my second favorite Ravens pick if it happens, a man who projects to be a three-down player from the start, a bulldozer. We've talked about him already, pro-ready. Only one season after leaving Georgia. He left Georgia to go to Florida State, but then he excelled. It's Jermaine Johnson. We don't have to do too much more on him because we did just talk about him a lot with the Ravens pick. But you look at the Eagles. I know they brought in Hassan Reddick, the hometown kid, to come back. Sack machine there. But outside of that, it's Derek Barnett, the defensive end. I believe I was just looking at it as well. Brandon Graham, who is really getting up there in age as well. So you bring in another guy.
Coming off an Achilles injury, I think.
Yeah,
too,
I believe you're right there. So I think they would rather have a guy, an interior defensive lineman, but with Wyatt and Davis off the board, I don't think there's anybody there yet. Jermaine Johnson is incredible value at 18. So you go with Garrett Wilson and Jermaine Johnson, you're feeling pretty damn good about yourself as an Eagle, as an Eagles fan.
Yeah, I love that pick. There's always the one guy, if not more, who fall. And Jermaine Johnson, he's got an interesting story. Was at Georgia for 2 years and was sort of like a spot player for them, and now at Florida State has that awesome year. He's going to be 23 years old as a rookie, which is sometimes seen as a half negative. So another one of those guys, did he have one really, really good season? Or is this the first season of many to come where he is a Pro Bowl player? So a good pick there for the Eagles. And I am back on the clock with the Saints at 19. And I'm New Orleans. I've worked this perfectly based on the depth of different positions after taking Penning at 16. I'm now dealing with wide receiver, and I'm taking Drake London Danny Kelly of The Ringer had this comparison, so I don't want to just steal it, but I promised everyone that when I saw the video on YouTube, saw the clips of him, I also agreed. It's just, it springs off the film, let's say. He looks like Mike Evans. He's 6'4", 200 plus pounds. He runs the same as Mike Evans. He is the definition of like a hands catcher. The ball never hits him in the chest. He is always reaching out with his hands, always high pointing the ball. And if I'm the Saints, I'm thrilled to be getting him at 19. Michael Thomas has not been like the same for multiple years now for them. Marcus Callaway led the team last year with 46 receptions, and that's not going to get it done. So the Saints, they go with Jameis Winston, and they got to build a little bit around him. So they get the offensive line help, and then they get the wide receiver help with Drake London going to New Orleans at 19.
I like it. Makes sense. When I did these mocks just on my own, I ended up with a receiver to the Saints in every single one of them. So it seems like if they're not packaging these picks, I think one of them ends up being a wide receiver, like, without a doubt. And that's even with Michael Thomas allegedly coming back. Who knows if that's true or not. It's been a weird saga with him. But now the dreaded rival, the evil empire, the Pittsburgh Steelers are on the clock.
Well, you got the Ravens, so you have to take the Steelers too.
Yeah, I know. It's the duality of life or whatever. So the Steelers have some needs, and, you know, it's funny. I took Malik Willis, who I think has Mike Tomlin has been openly pining for, clearly, in the pre-draft process. But I know some people feel otherwise. I do not see the Steelers leaving this draft without taking a quarterback. It seems impossible, having watched the entirety of the 2019 season when Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges wasted an excellent defense that has deteriorated a little bit since then, despite, you know, what TJ Watt and Cameron Hayward do to the Ravens every time they play them. The rest of the defense hasn't been all that. But despite the Steelers having some needs, they really, I think, you know, they really revamped their offensive line in the offseason here. I think they're going for a quarterback. And I think that quarterback in Kevin Colbert's final draft, the longtime GM of the Steelers, I think they are going to take Matt Corral. And I know the...
Whoa!
Kenny Pickett's there. I know that everyone likes Kenny Pickett, but Mike Tomlin has said over and over, they've made this whole point about they want athletic quarterbacks who can run, because Ben Roethlisberger couldn't do that for the last 15 years of his career. And, you know, I think they're looking here at Desmond Ridder or Corral. I like Corral more personally. Might just be from watching Ole Miss games and, you know, Lane Kiffin throwing the clipboard in the air, all the fun that an Ole Miss football game brings. But I love Matt Corral. I think he has things he clearly needs to work on, but I just like his upside. And I think of all the quarterbacks that aren't Malik Willis, he probably has the highest upside here. And I know I'm the quarterback guy in this mock now. I've taken both quarterbacks selected, but you know, more quarterbacks always go than you think. I'm not going to be surprised if we leave this first round with without four quarterbacks. Like, if four quarterbacks get taken on Thursday night, I'm not going to be shocked. But, yeah, so I think the Steelers, they're not a team that likes to, you know, I feel like kick the can down the road. I think they're going to take a chance on Matt Corral because they saw what a life with a full season without Ben Roethlisberger looked like, and it was awful. And I just don't see them riding Mitch Trubisky and Mason Rudolph for a full season. So Matt Corral is the pick here. And yeah, they're going to try to compete and keep up in the AFC North QB arms race that is occurring here.
Oh, man. I was sure you were going to take Ridder or Pickett, but I think that's interesting. This is why This is why this draft is so fun. I think it's unpredictable. And Corral, yeah, he is probably got the bigger upside of those guys. I think people are relating.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I thought a lot about Ridder. He does seem like a Mike Tomlin guy, like a winner. That seems like a guy the Steelers would pick, like a guy who's like does he have all the tools? Not really, but all he does is win, and that has to mean something, and a mature guy. But yeah, for me, it's more just a personal pick. I'm more intrigued by Corral, but big picture, I think the Steelers are taking a quarterback here.
See, this is interesting. All right, so, you know, I have Evil Empire number two, although their Darth Vader is gone, and that is the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots have an interesting number of needs for a team that spent a lot of money it last offseason. You know, obviously the non-Belichick, like, oh my God, why is he spending all this money? It's because they haven't really hit on draft picks very, very recently. And I'm a bit conflicted here. They clearly need interior offensive line help, and there's a local lad from Boston College that is sitting right there for me at 21. They need linebacker help. Jamie Collins, Dante Hightower, Kyle Van Noy, all gone from this team as well. They need secondary help. There's guys like Kair Elam who, I mean, he might be good, but I remember Matt, so I don't know if I really just want to draft him because of, you know, just the past experiences. They could always use a little receiver help, although they did sign Devontae Parker, so maybe that's out of the picture. But a guy like Chris Olave is still there. A guy like Treylon Burks is still there as well, so I'm not sure what to do here. George Karlaftis, the edge out of Purdue, who just seems like if he falls to the Ravens, everybody's going to be like, that's a typical Raven, hard-nosed, tough player, which you can kind of say about the same thing with the New England Patriots. Daxton Hill, the safety out of Michigan, versatile safety who, you know, Bill Belichick loves versatile players, so maybe that could help. I'm going to go with Devin Lloyd. I'm going to take the linebacker. I know it's something that they haven't done in the past, but you know what? Their past couple of drafts haven't been that great anyway, so maybe you just do take this first-round linebacker like you did with Hightower all those years ago. Can kind of do everything. Projects is more of a weak side linebacker, instinctive, and you know, as much as we love N'Kobe Dean and watching him play, Devin Lloyd is kind of being graded out as the best interior linebacker for this team, or for this draft, excuse me. So I'm going Devin Lloyd at 21 to the New England Patriots.
I keep circling back to either of these linebackers going to the Patriots too, and it's kind of scary because I don't like good defensive players falling to Bill Belichick, especially like you mentioned, like the why Lloyd's graded out higher. I think both will, if either one ends up with the Patriots, they'll be great for 10 years and it'll annoy us.
It'll be very annoying.
So, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I really like Devin Lloyd. I think there's a chance that the Ravens may move back if some of the things don't look good. I feel like he would be a guy they'd move back six spots maybe and then try to take. He looked like the complete package as a linebacker. Had the size, speed, strength. And he was on a defense that wasn't Georgia, so he was kind of like not protected by eight other first-round picks at the same time. He was just the guy and made plays all over the place and had like the best hands I've ever seen from a linebacker in a long time. I love that. Love that pick, and I hate that the Patriots get him at 21. But I am on the clock at 22 with the Green Bay Packers. And Tim, oh my gosh, I wanted you to take Treylon Burks so bad so that I could just laugh and have the Packers not take a wide receiver again with their first pick. They have two picks in this first round. They pick again at 28, and I was going to push that wide receiver choice to 28. They need all the wide receiver help in the world, and with this guy still available, he's been mocked to them a bunch of different times, and he's on the board, so I think he's a perfect fit, and it's Treylon Burks, the wide receiver out of Arkansas. He's been called Debo Samuel 100 different times because of his ability to play in a lot of different spots on the field. I half agree with that. I see a little bit more speed than Debo Samuel, and I see a little less brawn than Debo Samuel. This guy is 6'2", weighs 225 pounds, and ran a 4.5. He's got a lot of very nice things put together. He's the big dude who can also just burn. Look at the video of him separating from an Alabama corner and then outrunning three different Alabama defenders. If that's the level, then he's an NFL player, and the Packers are thrilled to get him at 22. And they keep Aaron Rodgers happy for at least a couple of minutes until they draft again at 28 and get somebody who's not another wide receiver.
Yeah, I think it seems... I wouldn't put it past the Packers to not draft a wide receiver, because it'd be funny, and they've, like, it seems like they live to sort of antagonize Aaron Rodgers to try to get the best out of him. But it seems impossible they're not going to take a receiver in this draft. So I think that makes a lot of sense. The Cardinals are a weird team. They are in a ongoing contract dispute, I guess you could call it, with Kyler Murray. So
take a third quarterback.
23.
Take him again.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if for some reason Kyler Murray gets traded on draft night, that would certainly, I think, impact the direction they're looking. But the Ringer kind of noted they have very few, very little depth at corner, and also have old pass rushers after letting trading Chandler Jones to the Raiders. So that was a questionable decision. So I think, with, I guess, the caveat, we should have mentioned him probably a little bit with the Ravens. I think if he hadn't torn his Achilles, this would be a spot David Ojabo might be at, and maybe even, you mentioned a guy the Ravens might be looking at later if they're not going pass rusher in the first. Who knows? They might be able to snag Ojabo in the second. But the guy I'm going to pick here, and he lines up exactly with one of the Ringer's quote-unquote friendly suggestions, is George Karlaftis, probably the last of the great non-Ojabo prospects, or projected first-round pass-rushing prospects on board out of Purdue. You know, I didn't watch a ton of Purdue games, admittedly, but he was very disruptive in all the games I saw of Purdue. He's a big guy. You know, he's rushes with power, which is very similar to a J.J. Watt on their team. So maybe I think Watt could certainly serve as a mentor to him, and that could probably help him a lot. So, yeah, with the caveat, I guess, also of just who knows what's going on with Kyler Murray, because that will clearly impact what the Cardinals do in this draft. And I'm sure there'll be more noise about that in the lead up to the draft from his agent about him not playing without a new contract, et cetera, et cetera. I think, for the purpose of this exercise, I think George Karlaftis is a good pick, solid pick.
Yeah, I like that pick as well. And I think, you know, they could just go weapon, weapon, weapon again. But I think some of those guys are off the board. Speaking of a team that could go weapon, 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 and could have gone Arkansas weapon with Jerry Jones' ties to them, would have been Treylon Burks here. It would have been a tough decision for me with the Cowboys at number 24. But it is not anymore, because Antonio took Treylon Burks off the board. I think Treylon Burks is one of the most intriguing players in this draft as well. I think, you know, a bit raw, but get the ball in his hands. Just get the ball in his freaking hands and let's see what happens type of guy. You know, Jerry would love that. I could see Jerry going, Olave's here. Let's just take Olave. Instead, we're going back to our roots here with the Dallas Cowboys. Those teams that I can't say good, because they haven't been good in a very long time, or great, I should say. But when they were starting to get back into one of the better teams in the NFL, it was because of the strong offensive line play. They've lost a little bit of that. They still have guys like Zach Martin and Tyron Smith, but the left guard spot is wide open. And that's why we're going to a guy who I could have taken 21, who I decided not to. It's Zion Johnson out of Boston College. Pretty much does it all. It's funny with interior offensive linemen. You wait to pick them until later in the draft. And then, you know, we have Dane Brugler here from The Athletic goes, yeah, he's going to be a decade-long – he's going to have a decade-long career starting in the NFL. At 24, sign me up for that. Probably at least a good level, if not great or elite level there in the interior offensive line. That's what wins games for you. Jerry, don't go flashy. Go interior. He takes Zion Johnson out of Boston College.
That's a great pick.
Jerry Jones has, you know, took Zach Martin, took who is the – the center, I'm blanking on it, out of Wisconsin, that was there for a long
Travis
time.
Travis Frederick.
Yes, he's taking his interior guys in the first round, so that would not be shocking.
And his Arkansas boy is off the board. The Hog's off the board, so right. now he's forced to take an interior guy.
And that puts me on the clock with the Buffalo Bills at 25. Bills don't have a lot of needs. They were very good. They are very good. But one spot that they could at least build depth is at corner. Tre'Davious White is coming off a torn ACL. Levi Wallace left for the Pittsburgh Steelers this offseason. So I would admit that a few of the guys are already gone who would have been picked, but I'm gonna, you know, I'm the Bills. I'm ready to make a run. I don't have to do best player available. I'm more looking to plug this one hole that I have and try to make, you know, another run at a Super Bowl. So I'm taking the best corner on the board at the moment, and that's Kaiir Elam out of Florida. Boy, if you want to feel old, I'm about to read you something as a Ravens fan. Son of former NFL safety Abram Elam and nephew of former Ravens first rounder Matt Elam. That's a tremendous bummer, just having to be reminded of Matt Elam as a Raven and as a first-round draft pick. But his nephew looks to be maybe a better player than he was. 6'2", 190 pounds, had 5 breakups, and is known to be aggressive in the run game and strong in the passing game. He's got good size, and the Bills are going to plug him in as maybe the third corner, and that's all they really need. And they move on from this first round, and they try to make another run to the Super Bowl.
I like it. Makes sense.
I think it's interesting. Sorry, Jason. I didn't mean to jump in on you, because I know you're up here 26 here. I think a guy like Breece Hall would be so good for them. Like, just take another stud offensive player to build around there. But I can totally see what you need. And running back, first round, do you do it? Do you not do it? What have you? But something about that just screams fun for me, especially because the Bills just haven't, you know, Josh Allen is their best running back. And how long can you be doing that?
Yeah, that I'm not going to lie and say, yeah, every time I mocked, I gave them Breece Hall. But I think it's similar for fun reasons. I think for exactly what you said, Tim, I think that's the case for picking a Kaiir Elam. You know, you could get running backs later these days, we've learned. But the Titans, so... I had looked at Trevor Penning for a very long time. Another guy Antonio took potentially off the board for me a while back at this spot. He would seemingly slot in perfectly for them at right tackle and could maybe even be their left tackle of the future if he plays well. The Taylor Lewan is starting to get up there. But I am going with they also have a need at receiver. No longer have Julio Jones, who was released, and who knows if they'll have A.J. Brown, as we, I think, discussed last week. He is one of these many receivers in kind of a contract standoff with his team. I have to imagine they'll get a deal done. Mike Vrabel seems very interested. They did trade for Robert Woods. He got injured late in the year, or midway through the year, so who knows where he is. So I'm taking a wide receiver, and I'm taking what I think is the best receiver on the board, and Chris Olave. I'm a little surprised he fell as far. I think I'm not going to be shocked if there's a run on receivers in general in the draft on Thursday night. But I think he just kind of fills sort of a good need for them. A.J. Brown's just such a physical freak. And I think Olave, you think of him being like a lot smoother probably, and I think they would just pair well together. And you're kind of married to Ryan Tannehill. I think Tennessee could be a sneaky quarterback team, but I don't, they can't really get out of Tannehill's deal. So I think they're married to Ryan Tannehill's for the next season. So I think they just have to try to give him as many weapons as possible. So Chris Olave is the pick here. But I wanted them to Trevor Penning to be on the board because he just seems like a Mike Vrabel guy to the core.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could also see them taking that quarterback and you going 3-for-3 in our mock of taking all the quarterbacks here in the draft, which would be interesting. All right, I'm up with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. If you didn't know, Tom Brady's back. That's fun for everybody. And they are in win now mode. I see two needs for this team. Ndamukong Suh is still not signed as of this recording. They need interior defensive line help along with Vita Vea. But they also need to keep their geriatric quarterback upright. So what I'm going to do, and they lost, they brought in Shaq Mason from the New England Patriots. So that's one spot filled. But they still need to fill their left guard spot. I'm going to go with Kenyon Green. Pretty good in pass protection, a bit of a mauler as well. Has some penalty issues, which this is dumb football guy, but when you're playing with Tom Brady, that stuff gets fixed because he simply won't tolerate it.
So for me, I'm going back-to-back guards here. I know it's very just typical here on Pod Like a Raven. Tim taking interior offensive lineman. But I'll take Kenyon Green, the man out of Texas A&M, going 27 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
All right, let me recap some picks. I think the last one I said was Trevor Penning at 16, Andrew Booth Jr. at 17, Jermaine Johnson at 18. I guess those three teams would be Saints, Chargers, and Eagles. Then Drake London at 19 to the Saints. Matt Corral to the Steelers at 20. Welcome to the AFC North, Matt Corral. Devin Lloyd at 21 to the Patriots. Treylon Burks at 22 to the Packers. George Karlaftis at 23 to the Cardinals. Zion Johnson at 24 to the Cowboys. Matt Elam's nephew, Kyrie Elam, at 25 to the Buffalo Bills. Chris Olave, 26 to the Titans, and Kenyon Green at 27 to the Packers, or excuse me, to the Bucks. And at 28, I am on the clock with the Packers, who have now dealt with the wide receiver situation at pick 22. And at 28 now, they kind of have, I guess, space to do what they want. They kind of can look to fill other situations. They can try to get the best player available. And I was kind of in between. I was in between a couple of defensive players. Arnold Ebiketie at a Penn State is a guy that has been mocked to the Packers. He's got sort of a mix of a good productivity and good sort of growth opportunities. But this is, we'll see if this ends up happening because it is a first round pick, but they're going to feel okay with the fact that this is their second pick of the first round. They can have a little bit of freedom here, and they're going to go with David Ojabo out of Michigan. He's very, very, very good. He is as disruptive as Aiden Hutchinson, in my opinion, just without maybe some of the numbers. Had that terrible Achilles tear at the combine, but he will be back. I think just in terms of players, he's the best one on the list at this point. He's a guy that would have been, I don't know, Jace, you can confirm this with me, a top 15 pick, top 20, if he was healthy?
Yeah, I think he was trending that way. It certainly was a lot of buzz, I feel like, about him being top 20, for sure.
And so I get the aspect of, well, the Packers are in win-now mode with Aaron Rodgers, but Ojabo's going to be back that first season. It's not like he's missing the entire first season. You know, it'll take a while probably to get healthy and rehab, but it's just a situation where they've made Aaron Rodgers happy, so now they're going to do the best thing for the franchise, and that's going to get a super talent who has dropped from an injury that he will come back from in due time, and it's David Ojabo, the edge rusher out of Michigan.
I like it. I like taking risks when you have two first-round picks. The Ravens, as we remember, did it last year by taking a guy that had no sacks as a pass rusher. So now we have back-to-back picks by the Kansas City Chiefs, and I will be absolutely floored if they make both of these picks. I am guessing one of these will be traded in some way, either the Chiefs trading up or them trading the second pick or the 29, whoever really wants to get back into the first round to draft someone who might be falling. And I'll be honest, I don't totally know what to do with this pick. The Chiefs have some needs. Like, you look and they definitely need some help on the back end. They let Tyrann Mathieu go. But I'm going to go a little off the board here, I think, in terms of things they need. So this might be my most selfish pick of guys I like, but I'm giving them N'Kobe Dean. I think Dean is going to be a first-round pick. I think the Chiefs just need talent on the defense, and despite, I think, the allure, there's plenty of good wide receivers still, and they might, I don't know, I don't want to speak for my co-host, may or may not take a wide receiver with this next pick, but I think if there's a defensive talent like N'Kobe Dean still on the board, I think the Chiefs probably have to jump on it, just because you need to improve on the defensive side of the ball, I think, just the talent back there. And I think, you know, Dean is probably not a perfect football player in the NFL, but I just think, personally, I think he's so smart and so instinctual, and he'll find a way to make it work. And that'll stink if he's on one of these AFC contenders and he's the heart and soul of their defense while Patrick Mahomes runs the offense. So To stop him from falling, I am taking N'Kobe Dean off the board.
Yeah, him and Nick Bolton, I think, together would be a pretty decent combo as linebackers.
Jace, he feels like the perfect chief, like a very good player, and yet on a third down in January, somebody's going to break a tackle because N'Kobe Dean is too small, and the Chiefs are going to be upset again at their defense, like not getting a stop.
In Baltimore, right? That's where that tackle's getting broken by J.K. Dobbins.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, it's interesting because I was kind of banking on you to just take a receiver here, and I was gonna fix the defense. But you know what? I'm going to stick to my guns. Obviously, receiver is the ultimate need with the Tyreek Hill going to Miami Dolphins. They did bring in Juju Smith-Schuster. Still have Mecole Hardman there. Valdez Scantling came in as well. And they have Patrick Mahomes. So he's supposed to make all these guys better. That is what he does best. And I think you can get value in the draft at a wide receiver position. There's probably guys there. What you might not be able to get value at is versatile defensive back. Guess who you just lost? Tyrann Mathieu, who could pretty much do it all in the defensive backfield. I know they brought in Justin Reed. He's a good football player, but he's not Tyrann Mathieu. And so I'm going to give them, as I literally just found out as I pulled up another scouting report, the younger brother of Ravens running back Justice Hill, Daxton Hill out of Michigan. The safety who can play slot corner. He can play a split safety role as well. You can put him all over the field, much like you could with a Tyrann Mathieu. And I think Steve Spagnuolo is going to have a hell of a time with a guy like that who is an instant starter. So it sounds a little funky. As Jay said, we're trying to just nail one of these picks because they're definitely not making both of them. They might not even make either of them and move both of them up to try and grab an elite Jameson Williams-type receiver that they would like, I think is one of the rumors out there. But in this situation, I say they go defense, defense. Everybody gets mad on Thursday, and then Friday they take like six wide receivers because if you don't know, the Chiefs have 12 draft picks. So they get a bunch of gems in the second and third round, and they end up being Tyreek Hill superstars, and then Daxton Hill and N'Kobe Dean are all pros, and life is terrible, and nothing matters.
Yeah. I like that, unfortunately, and I think it's a good it's a good pick. I am picking for, this is my last pick, for the Cincinnati Bengals at 31. And they basically had two big needs, and one was offensive line, but then in the offseason they signed guard Ted Karras from the Patriots, they signed Alex Kappa from the Bucks. They got Lael Collins from the Cowboys, so they kind of made a very specific point to address offensive line. So there's a couple of interior guys, I think, still on the board at this point, right? Let me pull this. So Tyler Linderbaum is there, but they've made so many moves already to get offensive linemen, so then the other move for them would be somebody in the secondary. But the board is pretty dry with that at this point. A lot of corners and safeties have already been taken, so they might be in a let's get best player available, but I think that's Tyler Linderbaum, so I'm going to have them take him. I don't care that they got a bunch of free agents on the offensive line. They need youth as well on the offensive line. They want to keep Joe Burrow alive for the next 10 years, so yeah, they made some good moves there, but with him still available at 31, they're just going to, you know, they're going to take him and hope that he becomes a starter for them over the next 10 years. So this stud lineman out of Iowa, and the top center, Jason, would you say
lot? yeah, there's a few guys that people like in the later rounds, but yeah, in terms of guys, and I do think Linderbaum will go in the first, so I'm glad someone took him. I thought about him maybe for the Packers, but they've drafted a bunch of guys early-ish that might be their center. But yeah, I think the Bengals would love if Linderbaum's as good as people think he can be, I think they're pretty content having him be Joe Burrow's center for the next 10 years. That would stink for the Ravens. I wouldn't like that. And yeah, and then that would probably allow them to probably swing Ted Karras, who you mentioned they signed, over to guard, which I think he played a lot more of probably with the Patriots over the years. So yeah, that would stink for the Ravens. I think that was a good pick, and I'm glad he's off the board because I do think he'll go to one of these teams, perhaps. In the later stages, I wouldn't be shocked, but of the first round. But now I am on the board again, and the Lions, once again, have a lot of needs. But I am, I don't know if this is controversial, I'm taking a quarterback again.
Yes.
And I am going with, oh boy, I'm going with the guy I think feels like a Dan Campbell guy. Now, that could be Desmond Ridder. I am going with Kenny Pickett here because I think, what do the Lions want to do? We know they want to run the ball, and I think they like the idea of a polished, very old quarterback prospect who can come in right away and read out the calls and get everyone in their place. And is he the most exciting? No, but he seems like someone who, to me, is like would slide right in with the Lions. Now, is he too much of just Jared Goff 2.0? That remains to be seen. He's significantly cheaper than Jared Goff, so that's the case. But I do think the Lions, if Ridder or Pickett or Matt Corral are all on the board, I think at this point, I think they take a quarterback here to get the fifth-year option. I know next year's class is better, but I don't think there's – I think we saw with the Cardinals a few years ago, like, if the Lions go, like, 2-15, I don't think that's going to prevent them from taking Bryce Young next year, even if they take Kenny Pickett here. You can trade Kenny Pickett, as the Cardinals did with Josh Rosen once upon a time when they drafted him top 10. So I do think the Lions make a move for a quarterback here, because it is just so hard, I think, to sell your fan base on two straight years of Jared Goff, even though contractually you're kind of married to Jared Goff this year. Yeah, I don't see them leaving this draft without a quarterback. So I'm taking Kenny Pickett. I just trust him a little more, I think, than Ridder. But I could see a team viewing Ridder as having more of an upside than Pickett, too. So it's kind of a toss-up, I think, between those two.
I think,
I assume Pickett's going to be in the – he's like going to be at the draft, right? So he'll be the guy that they just keep showing on camera 8,000 times as the hours drag on. But we'll get picked eventually at the end of the first round.
Yeah, I would just say quickly, apologies, Antonio. I think a quarterback gets picked there at 32. I don't know if it's the Lions making that pick, but someone gets picked there, just like Lamar Jackson, because they want that fifth-year option that the first-round pick gives you if the guy actually turns out. So whether it's somebody trading back up into the first round to grab him, maybe falling back to 32, or it's just the Lions, somebody is going there.
At the last few picks, to recap, at 28, David Ojabo, the edge out of Michigan. At 29, to the Chiefs, Nakobe Dean, who will never be able to tackle Mark Andrews across the middle because he's too small. And I say this and then the Ravens are going to end up drafting him and my tune is going to change entirely. But at 30 to the Chiefs, Daxton Hill, safety out of Michigan. At 31, Tyler Linderbaum, the center out of Iowa to the Bengals. And at 32, Kenny Pickett, Kenny Two Gloves Pickett, quarterback out of Pittsburgh, going to the Detroit Lions. All right, guys, we are long on time here, but any last thoughts on this draft? Players that you liked where they went, players that you hated where they went. Happy with Jordan Davis at 14 to the Ravens. Hoped he would have gotten somebody else. Any final thoughts on this mock first round?
I think we did a pretty good job, honestly. And who knows? This could all blow up completely Thursday night when we're looking at this. And I'm sure all texting each other furiously about what's going on. The trades are going to blow everything out of the water, but we did predict, like, Devontae Smith last year wasn't the right slot because of trades happening, but we did pick the right fit, so we'll see if we can do that again. I think we hit a ton of team needs, and the one thing I will say, and I don't want to end it on a bad note, I wonder if both Jordan Davis and Jermaine Johnson are there on the board on Thursday night. And the Ravens go Jordan Davis, and we're all very, very happy. How does that look in 5 years, edge rusher versus D-tackle? I just worry about that just a little bit. Jordan Davis Stan, Jordan Davis podcast. It's been accepted here. I worry about that just a little bit.
And that's why I wonder if that's a choice the Ravens opt out of and just like take a linebacker. But we don't. I know they have their board and whoever's graded and all that. That's usually how the Ravens do things. But we'll see. I'm very intrigued. I'm with you guys. I'm sure the order is wrong, but I do think this will generally be the collection of players who all go in the first round. I don't think there's anyone we egregiously missed. I think I mentioned I won't be shocked if Ridder works his way into the first round because there's always just more quarterbacks taken than you expect, even in supposedly weak QB classes. And I'm not going to be surprised even if we get two QBs in the top like 10, because that just like if the Panthers take one and if the Falcons take a QB and the Seahawks take a QB, that's not going to shock me either, because that's just seems to be how it goes. If I have any qualms, as I mentioned throughout, kind of throughout, it's just Antonio seemed to take guys I wanted for other teams like right before.
That's just a sign of a good GM, Jace.
Yeah,
that's
no,
just,
I loved the idea of Devontae Wyatt on the Chargers, and so I was devastated that he went to the Texans, because I just have visions of the Raiders running up the middle to end the Chargers season and running all over the Chargers in that final game. So besides that, yeah, I think I like our list a lot. I think my quarterback picks are perhaps the hottest takes. And I think I'm the only guy who took a quarterback.
You are the only guy who took a quarterback.
Which is interesting. But, so we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, I think we did a good job. But, you know, we said up front, it's not going to be as good as last year. There's just so much unknowns compared to what we entered, where we pretty much knew the first two picks 100%, and there was a good inkling of, you know, the Bengals were taking either Ja'Marr Chase or Penei Sewell, and it's stuff like that, like where it was pretty easy to kind of easier I think to read the tea leaves. Whereas this year, that's what we said will make it so exciting, is because I think there's no consensus on who's going where and why, so it should be fun to watch.
Hey, Jace, you are the only one to have taken a quarterback, but had I done this mock myself, I would have had more quarterbacks, and I would have had them higher up. I think teams cannot help themselves when it gets to draft night, and I'm going to say this is my optimism shining here, but if we get some quarterbacks at 6, at 8... at 9, right? If it goes Panthers, Falcons, Seahawks, all in need of quarterbacks, and all of a sudden they're reaching for quarterbacks, or if the Saints take that 16 and 19 pick and package it for something and move up into the top 10 and grab a QB, every time that happens, as a Ravens fan, you should be happier and happier, because it is pushing other guys further down the list. And I just want Kayvon Thibodeau to fall to like 8 or 9, because after doing the deep dive, I would 100% give away as many of the fourth round picks as are necessary to move up 5 or 6 spots to grab him. Big fan of Thibodeau, and I cannot wait to be proven wrong in so many ways in the next few months and then years. But yeah, we'll see. It's exciting. The Ravens drafting high at 14, something that we have not had, or we're not used to, I suppose, and they have a fantastic track record of getting studs when they're drafting that high. So draft night, Thursday, the three of us will probably be on some sort of technology communicating as the draft is unfolding, and just prayers up that the Ravens don't move back to pick 28 or something like that and get a bunch of other picks. That's going to do it for us. We will be back a week from now to discuss all the picks, what ended up happening, how right we were, more likely how wrong we were. Thank you, as the listener, for sticking around and following what is one of our more fun episodes every year, first round mock draft. For Jace Evans and Tim Horsley, I am Antonio Barbera. Thank you for listening to us on Pod Like a Raven. We will see you next week.